Welcome to What's Left, your weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Barca with Kenny Cepeda and Andy Lupson. And today we will be discussing the Super Tuesday Democratic primary election.
Sort of.
Yes. Why is that, Andy?
Well, for a while, Eduardo, we've talked about your evolving attitude about Bernie Sanders. And so I think because of Super Tuesday, because of everything that's happened with Bernie Sanders and Biden and the Democratic primaries, we thought it would be a good idea to talk to both Eduardo and Kenny about their evolving ideas about Bernie Sanders. That's what I thought today was about. Because you voted for Bernie Sanders in 2016, correct?
I did, yeah.
And Kenny, you voted for?
Yes.
Yeah, so we have two people who voted for Bernie Sanders in 2016. And I know, Eduardo, you were wondering about whether you'd be voting for him 2020, correct?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't actually know. At one point you were saying you weren't going to vote for him, right?
Mm.
But I don't even know if that's the case anymore. So, but I thought it would be, because I think there's a lot of people on the left who are struggling with this. Some of them aren't. Some of them are just excited. Oh, we want their Bernie, you know, feeling the burn. I don't think anybody here is necessarily feeling the burn, but...
Sounds painful.
It is. It's very itchy, and you really need to take antibiotics to get rid of it. But I do think that I'm curious about where you were back in the day, back then, and I think people here might be curious about where you were and where you are now, and how you got there in terms of your attitude towards a socialist, so-called socialist candidate like Bernie Sanders. So that's the idea, I think.
Yeah, and Kenny as well.
Yeah, both.
Yeah,
both
of course. No,
yeah. So, I sent them both some questions to think about. In 2016, what was the reason? What excited you most about the Sanders campaign? And this question is for both Kenny and for Eduardo.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, similar to you, I was traveling between Nicaragua and here.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't fully connected to the political process here, but I mean, I've always been left-leaning. I mean, I voted for Obama, you know, I was...
In 2008.
And
12, maybe.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I went to see his inauguration, but, you know, obviously looking at his legacy and the facts in retrospective, you know, you realize. And so Bernie Sanders posed this, he presented himself as this more radical, you know, left. And at the time, I think I was still holding on to this Democrat-Republican binary, the at least argument. You know, the at least they're not as bad.
The lesser evil.
The lesser evil,
yep.
Yeah, basically. And I mean, some of my political understanding of socialism, I hadn't really taken the dive into socialism that I have in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I mean, I was very much a liberal still. So Bernie was like that, you know, person that was going to challenge the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason I was herded into that, you know, voting for him. And because obviously Hillary Clinton, her record, you know, in Central America, for example, which I cared about, Honduras,
yeah.
And, you know, war in Libya. And yeah, so he was the best candidate, the lesser of the evils. Or, I mean, actually, he seemed pretty radical.
Yeah.
At the time.
So it wasn't just a lesser evil. There was some things you were excited about his candidacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know...
Do you remember... I'm going to get to you. But do you remember specific positions? There were specific things that you liked about what he was saying or policies? Or was it just that he was a socialist?
I mean, just he was a socialist. Again, I wasn't too focused on the policies. I mean, I can't even remember the exact policies. I mean, you know, again, taking on the establishment and... You know, at least the rhetoric of the workers, you know, and that has always been a focus of mine growing up in Latin America, and you know, having somewhat of a tradition or memory of rising up you know, and people in our past, and you know, insurrection of sorts against the powers that be.
Yeah.
And so he represented that, you know, insurrection of sorts and within the system. Mm-hmm. But
I knew the difference between I didn't know the exact terms democratic socialist, but I knew the things he was talking about every time he was referring to Finland, every time he was referring to Sweden, or every time he was referring to the healthcare system in England, in the UK, and comparing to France, as for example, vacation time, or parental leave, or talking about public education, trying to not have students be held accountable for so much debt, and having free access to college. And so I knew those policies, and that wasn't within the context of socialism. I knew it wasn't exactly socialism. I knew it was, he was kept referring to Europe in comparison to all of the industrial countries, all of the developing countries, no? I didn't feel like it was, as Hillary Clinton was saying, that there were big promises that he couldn't achieve, because it has been able to be done in Europe. Maybe if it wasn't elsewhere, maybe I would have been somewhat skeptical. There is that saying, if it sounds too good to be true, you want to be suspicious or cautious, no?
Yeah.
So, I have identified myself mostly as a progressive, having campaigned for, before Bernie Sanders and other campaigns. Here locally in San Francisco, I was a big organizer in the John Avalos campaign, which was in 2011. Mm. So the word progressive was already introduced to me before Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. And I knew when we were talking about progressive politicians, who I really thought was progressive. The word socialist democrat, I think for me, that was a new introduction for me in 2016. I knew Hillary Clinton just by name recognition, right? I'm a millennial, like Kenny. So the 90s era, I quite knew Clinton. During the time of Fox in Mexico, the President Fox, Cárdenas, Cárdenas, the Fox time with...
Vicente Fox.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I said Cárdenas. So I knew just Hillary Clinton from that. And also from the 2008 elections as well, from Obama
versus
and
Clinton.
I think for me it was wanting to see a woman, but I knew that from knowing the history of the UK with Margaret Thatcher, she was a conservative. So for me, it was clear that if it was a woman, it didn't matter. Like, it was going to be like in the UK where you have a conservative woman. A woman's not going to necessarily change the politics of a nation if they still are conservative or neo-liberalist and they still uphold a lot of capitalist policies. What attracted me to Bernie Sanders was, number one, climate change. Anyone who knows my Facebook sees tons of posts about the environment.
Yeah.
And as well as student debt, how college education should be free. I've always upheld that. And I can talk about my own education and higher education and my relationship to that and how I really do think that it's an elitist thing if you can go to college education if it's not free.
And you are talking about 2016.
This is 2016 because he talked about
that. So there's some things in 2020.
Yeah, he said that college should be free.
Yep.
As well as, for me, it was the wealth gap. 2011 happened with Occupy Movement, which I was also a part of with working groups. And for me, it was about, when he brought it up, about income inequality, for me, it was very... It reminded me of 2011 and the Occupy movement.
Yeah.
It reminded me of why people were protesting all over the world.
The 1%.
The 1% versus the 99%. Yeah. And when he talked about that, no one else did but him. And I saw videos on YouTube where he was talking about that even prior to 2011. Mm-hmm. Then I said, this is my guy.
Yeah.
Because I'm for that, having been part of the Occupy movement. And that was also the time when I was in the John Avalos campaign, who is, by the way, I should mention for our audience, he was the former supervisor of District 11 here in San Francisco, which is the district that I live in. Please don't come after me now that I told you what district I live in. But it's the forgotten part of San Francisco, and he championed a lot of progressive policies. So anyhow, that was the reason why I was attracted to Bernie Sanders and healthcare, because I think healthcare is a right for everyone. I think that you shouldn't have to struggle to get it. So those were the main for me points. Immigration, yes, but these were, I think, for me, the ones that contrasted to other ones. And I could go on to a list, but these were the ones that stood out for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about, did you have pretty good enthusiasm? Like, there was that whole time of feeling the burn and stuff like that. Were you enthusiastic? Were you like, oh, I hope this guy's who he says he is? This is a question for both of you. How would you gauge your level of enthusiasm about that candidacy at the time?
I was a little distant because I didn't... I was concerned about leaving this country at the time because...
2006.
Yeah, because of personal reasons, you know, and financial hardship and stuff. So I didn't get to be as passionate about him as I was for Obama. Mm-hmm. And because I think that's when things were starting to turn within me about, you know, the U.S. and moving on from seeing an individual issues, you know, like immigration, which was something that had governed me, you know, since I was a kid, because, you know, being affected by the system, you know, personally and seeing everyone I went to school with. So that was one of the, but again, I was only looking at candidates in those lenses that were very isolated from, you know, another. So yes, I was concerned about income inequality. I was healthcare, but, you know, immigration was a big one. And, it always, you know, at least on rhetoric, it seemed like the Republicans weren't very immigrant friendly.
Right.
And so again, but I wasn't, you know, I wasn't super passionate about Bernie. I didn't have strong opinions. Like I was like, okay, he's the more, you know, he's pushing harder. So
he's better than Hillary.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's one thing that I will talk about, you know, about Hillary later, but, he was better than Hillary. Mm-hmm. And
not a lesser evil, but actually a better candidate.
Yeah, someone with intention, you know, and someone who was trying to upset and bring a different conversation to the table.
Yeah.
But again, I wasn't looking to make a life here at the time. So that's why I was like, it's not so much up to me. Mm-hmm. But no, I wasn't too passionate about him, but I was going to vote for him.
Yeah.
I was also in another country. So I feel as if I wasn't as... I tried to have as many people engage in conversations with me. I wrote lots of postcards and letters with... If anyone watching this, they will know that I wrote because the U.S. Post Office endorsed Bernie Sanders. Mm. So I would write on the front of every letter, thank you to my post person, my post delivery person, thanking them for their union
support. Must be the postal workers.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Excuse me. The postal workers union.
Because I was the post office.
Would be government. I'm sorry. Yeah. But either I'm way. So sorry. Yeah. So I would write a thank you to the post worker for. As they would deliver the post in big letters and yellow, I would write, thank you for supporting Bernie Sanders. You know, maybe some of them disagreed, so that's why some of my letters didn't get there, or they probably threw it out for and to spite me or whatever. But I that's what I did, I think. And I would hold conversations on Facebook with friends and post things. I think I was a lazy sort of politically involved. I didn't really, I was concentrated on another thing. I was in, the primaries happened in, yeah, I was in France. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I was in France. So I was trying to survive. I was working and lots of things in France. But I mean, my involvement was just declaring my support, as well as engaging in meaningful conversations with people. And yeah.
And
it wasn't as like some campaigners. I have campaigned in the past, but for Bernie Sanders, I will admit I did not campaign.
Yeah. And so I guess there was some enthusiasm, but you were also a little bit distant.
I was away.
Yeah.
Like, I think Kenny is, yeah. We were away out of this country. Yeah.
So,
we're in getting brain.
So the big thing that Sanders would talk about then and somewhat now as well is taking back the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. What were your feelings about the Democratic Party at that time?
You know, when I went to middle school in this country, in James Lick Middle School, I had a middle school teacher, her name is Stephanie Safran. I will never forget you. She introduced me to Bush, Al Gore, and Nader. And I learned about what it was to be independent for, in this case, Green Party, outside of those two. I'll never forget that. I thank that seventh grade teacher for introducing mm-hmm. me about third party politics. Mm-hmm. And so I did wonder if Bernie was an independent as a Vermont senator, why did he run as a Democrat? I would have wanted him to run as a third party. In 2000, in the debates, he was asked this in 2015. And he said that he had his team had looked into it. And it is true what he has said. If you run as a third party, take Jill Stein. If you run as a third party, you will, the Democrats and the Republicans will do everything in their power to not allow a third party in this country for you to run. It's not like in Mexico or in Europe where you have multiple parties.
Yeah.
Here you have only two and that's it. They will do everything in their power to uphold that. So I knew that I trusted his word because he said he had looked into it. Mm-hmm. And I knew that he had worked with a Democrat caucus in the senator's chambers. So I knew that he had an affiliation with them. So it made sense that he would run as a Democrat for me. And he said he would run as a Democrat to change the way that politics and the Democrats were running. He would change the way it was running. I had some skepticism about that, but I trusted him as an individual within that, as he was running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the question was about the Democratic Party, right?
Yeah.
So, by 2008,
About the party, yeah, yeah. I'm talking about Bernie here,
that's
and
fine.
You're talking
that's
about
fine.
The party no, itself. I'm sorry, I should talk about the Democratic Party.
No, I mean, I think you're basically...
I was talking about Bernie.
I think you answered the question.
Yeah. I apologize, yeah.
But by 2008, Obama comes to power. He comes on the back of the million people march for immigration. Mm-hmm. You know, this is... so, again, that was part of my thing that I cared about.
Yeah.
You know, looking around, looking at my community, and immigration was a big issue. Mm-hmm. And so... 2006, 2007, Occupy also comes, you know, 2008, right? Before Obama came into power, I thought of the Democrats as the working class party, as the, you know, not the rich party, because the Republicans, I saw them as, they just want to, you know, advance capitalism, you know, and I still thought about capitalism, not in the depth that I do now. But I was like, okay, capitalists, the rich, you know, just this basic dynamic. And so I thought the Democrats had our back, or at least they were the morally, you know, they had the moral high ground. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, again, leading up to 2008, And that's what I thought of them. But then Obama, you know, in the first 2 years, you know, okay, they have power, they have, you know, the political will, but they get nothing done in terms of immigration at the time.
Yeah.
And that's when we thought it was going to happen. And obviously for political maneuvering and stuff, they never pulled the trigger, I felt. And so that's when I started to become disillusioned with the Democratic Party, when I realized that they did not have the interest of immigrants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, that was the issue that was on my core. And, you know, and again, another aspect was that the Republicans were the war party, because 2001, you know, happened. I was in high school. Then the wars, you know, we saw the violence. We saw the lies, you know, mm-hmm. Halliburton and all those things. You know, those things shaped me. And I was like cementing this idea that it was all the Republicans.
Yeah.
And so, but then Obama, you know, was the person that shed a different light on the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. You know, then I started looking at NAFTA and Bill Clinton and the relationship, this direct line of assault on immigrants from both parties, mm-hmm. you know, and Obama continued that, you know, because, you know, that's another thing a lot of liberals don't want to admit or don't want to address is, you know, still to this day, even though the evidence is there, that Obama persecuted more immigrants than even Trump has to the moment. Yeah. You know, we're talking about, you know, like sound bites nowadays about family separation. The millions of people that Obama, you know, families or, you know, hundreds of thousands a year that he separated, that is family separation. That is terrorism. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I started to become disenchanted, you know, about the Democratic Party. And, but again, I thought it were working class. They were on the side of the working class and the poor. And, again, that led me to where I'm now. But that's, again.
But you did have maybe some hope. Maybe
yes,
of that Bernie was going to be able to
exactly
take it back.
Yeah, to again because they went astray, and you know I was still believing that it could be reformed. You know, mm-hmm. like the party from within. If someone just radical like this, you know, messianic figure. But even though that had taken a dent, because Obama was that messianic figure for me. Mm. You know, he was that again. I was part of the hope generation.
Yeah,
I was in in college at the time. You know, I voted. That was the first time I voted. Mm-hmm. You know, the first time I felt like I was going to make a difference and it mattered. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, but, you know, the lies were, you know,
right,
exposed afterwards.
I want to say that I spoke about Bernie within the Democrats Party. I meant to say, I mm-hmm. went off. So the Democrat Party for me, we are millennials. I grew up with the newspaper saying war from the Republicans. Yeah. And this was Bush.
Yeah.
I grew up with those headlines. I grew up with the Iraq invasion. I grew up with Bush taking away the president, the votes from Al Gore.
Yeah.
I grew up with so much of Bush's stupidest decisions that were painted in all of the media, especially all the liberal media, you know, CNN, MSNBC, and SNL making fun of Bush with that character. What's that actor's name?
Oh, Dana. Was that Dana Carvey?
No, it's that Will or...
Oh, Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell, yeah. By playing Bush. So I grew up with Bush being considered one of the most stupidest presidents.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And taking over for the Bush dynasty.
Yeah.
So that's what I grew up with. I grew up with that. And I remember teachers waging their rhetoric against Bush in all of my classes in high school. And I grew up in La Ciudad de Mexico and here in San Francisco and then in Europe. And everywhere I was, there was this talk about Bush. So I didn't, for a time, yes, I did also go and lived in Emmett, Idaho, where the rhetoric was different. But but mostly I was around liberal agenda.
Yeah.
And I was painted this picture about the Republicans, of how they were. And so the Democrats were, to me, considered as the moral or the conscious mm-hmm. Party. Mm-hmm. When I saw those newspapers of the New York Times with pictures of Iraqis with a black hood or bag over them.
Right, for the torture centers, other naked, graves and stuff like that.
Being amontonados, ¿cómo se dice amontonados?
Corralled or,
put together, a bunch together, and being put like estas pinzas, como se dice, were electrified. They pretended to like remove for going. You're going to be electrified with the torture techniques from soldiers.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then Guantanamo happened, right? Okay. And 9/11. So the way that Bush handled 9/11. So for me, the Democrats were painted this other way because this was the time of Bush.
Yeah.
When I was growing up,
the better alternative.
So when Obama came, and you had this contrast, and he was the first African-American candidate because Jesse Jackson ran in 1988, the year I was born, right? Also an insurgent, by the way. Mm-hmm. So for me, seeing Obama, I remember being here on 8th and Brennan at this big concourse site, and all of us went there to go hear Cornel West, Dr. Cornel West, all of the young people. And we went to go here, and there were this so many levels, and you could see in the atrium, Cornel West was talking and convincing people like myself that we had to change what was happening at the state of the White House. And this was contentious between Hillary Clinton and Obama. And the message of hope, that slogan was so great, even if, we were all cheated and lied about. I'm just saying that the slogan was great.
It's magic.
You know, hope, 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 hope. And then still using the slogan of Cesar Chavez by saying, we can, yes, we can,
si
se puede. That, taking up that and using, again, Martin Luther King Jr.'s Bible when he was taken on oath. I mean, the visual images for me are so clear why I was supporting the Democrats at that time. We were young, Kenny and I.
Yeah.
We were malleable. We were impressionable. So the Democrats, I think for me at least, I'll speak in this, I was conditioned to think that that was. Although I still remember, though, Miss Stephanie Safran, who said about the independents and the third parties in the back. So for me, this was the reason, my relationship with the Democrats. And who else was talking about is the gender and sexuality community issues. Who else was talking about immigration, even though he did not help or anything like that? But who else was talking? Certainly not the Republicans. And that's where I think we were fished, right?
So, talking about inclusion and, you know, in the marginalized.
And the rise of identity politics, right? So this is why, for me, the relationship with the Democrats were, for me, the best choice.
Yeah.
So I aligned myself with the Democrats at that time as an impressionable young person. Yeah.
So there were misgivings at the time, even in 2016, about the Sanders campaign and the mission that he said he was on of, I'm going to take back this country, I'm going to bring it to, I'm going to make it like Europe, you know, social security fully funded and all the things you're talking about of student debt being dealt with and healthcare, and even talking about socialism. And of course, to get the Democratic Party to become the party of the working class again, those kinds of things. Were there things that you had doubts about, even in 2016, about what he was saying or what he was doing?
Personally, I think I had a... I was skeptical in the sense that, all right, this is, I was starting to again to think of it as a system. You know, yeah, you can put one person, but, you know, it's a system. I wasn't calling it capitalism. I was calling it politics, you know, like independent from, you know, everything else. It was just the politicians. You know, if you change the politicians, if you put good politicians, they'll change the system. And so... Yeah, I think I was still like, okay, he'll need support. He can do this alone, but, you know, he's very well-meaning. He won't get everything done, but he'll get something done. So again, I wasn't convinced that he was going to change everything, but that he could get something done, you know, and yeah, I did. I was somewhat, I was, I never rejected the notion of socialism or communism. You know, at the time, just like many liberals, we talked about Castro and, you know, and like these rebels, right, opposed the empire. Because, I mean, you know, empire has always been in my mind.
Yeah.
And I've always looked at the U.S. I mean, I grew up knowing that the U.S. had intervened in Guatemala and a lot of Central American countries. That was part of my education, you know.
Yeah.
And so again, but it was, I was focusing on bad politicians, you know, and bad moral character. So if someone again, you know, could start to turn the tide, and that thing, I was like, he's the least worst at the time, or he's radical. Yeah. That's what it seemed like.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I mean, and one other thing I want to add is that Obama also sold us on getting out of Afghanistan, by the way, I should say, which was another reason why. And Bernie Sanders, I did trust him. I knew he had a strategy. The strategy is have high expectations, have demand high, and if you demand this way, you're going to get this way. Right. No?
Negotiate.
You try to demand real high, so you land somewhere where you would have not landed had you demanded at
very little.
Negotiation. So I knew that it wasn't necessarily going to be fulfilled completely, no? But what inspires me was that he was shifting the conversation way to the left, where Hillary Clinton, you can see her slowly evolving from the way she was saying from the beginning of her campaign towards the end. There is a funny SNL video on YouTube that you can find where she is herself, and slowly the character is putting a white wig and then changing and talking like Bernie Sanders. Because she eventually did begin to take up some of the things he had said, and using the word progressive, but she started adding to it, the progressive who gets things done, or, you know, and But I did trust, because I thought, well, if he does not, or he's not able to accomplish everything, he will at least leave that as his legacy, so that we continue on the work. Because I don't think, honestly, one person can do it by themselves. I really don't. I'm not that fooled by it.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought he is really reining in the Democrats, which they didn't like, you know, and he's shifting the conversation, and he is exposing the word socialism to the public, and everyone is, you know, the Red Scare tactics were not working, although they attempted to, both Republicans and Democrats. So I felt as if this was not, like, I learned my lesson from Obama, not to expect a lot, but at the same time, understanding that you can still trust that there will be some shift, some changes. And then looking at his record, he has been saying the same thing since before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that counted, the consistency. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I trusted him, yeah. So, he wasn't such a flip-flopper like Hillary.
Right. So I know that both of you have moved from there since then, which is 2018, 2020. But was there anything that happened in the 2016 campaign that started to be like, wait, what did he just do? What did this, was there any moment then in 2016 that was, whoa, this is a question I have now, this is a problem?
Yeah, I mean, just jumping behind the people he was fighting against at the end when he lost, you know, one thing I've been lately playing with is this, you know, he kissed the ring.
Yeah.
He bent his knee and kissed the ring. You know, that was a big red flag for me. You know, if you're such a radical, if you're against the system, if you're anti, you know, you want to change the establishment, why are you kissing the ring? And
what were you looking for him to do at that point?
To not endorse anyone.
Yeah.
Because again, they went at it, you know, in the debates, mm-hmm. and I still felt that he had the moral high ground. And again, because of the rhetoric and the things that he talked about. And again, I didn't know about Bernie Sanders until then. So yeah, I know his records start coming up, and or at least the parts that persuaded people towards him.
Yeah.
But that was to me a red flag. Okay, you're now, you know, because at that point when he lost, when he was robbed, straight up,
yeah,
robbed, and that was another thing. You know, you saw the maneuvering, and you're like, wait, what? So wait, they took your nomination, which things I don't even understand, but they took it, and yet you're still jumping behind them. Mm-hmm. That's what I had a lot of misgivings about voting for Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember if I voted for her. Mm-hmm. I don't remember, to be honest. Because at that point I was like, all right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Say your question.
Was there a break? Like, was there something in 2016 that you found very disappointing?
Yeah. Well, like Kenny, I didn't know Bernie Sanders before. I knew about Elizabeth Warren before I knew about Bernie Sanders, because in 2008, when the recession had happened and she went after the banks, that's how I knew about her.
Yeah.
And so when he started saying similar things to her, I was very enthusiastic. But what I was disappointed by was, I think I was more disappointed at the Democrats and the media for constantly dismissing Bernie Sanders,
yeah,
and his rallies. And they would jump to Trump, or they would jump to Hillary, who they endorsed unequivocally, you know, indirectly, if they did not say it out loud. Mm-hmm. And they would give lots of attention to Trump. And Bernie Sanders was winning here in Nevada, and he was and people were not paying attention. And there was, oh, he's having a little celebration over there. And he had these massive rallies. And Trump, you know, because he pays people to come, he thought, well, who are paying these people, you know, to go over there? But I was disappointed when the WikiLeaks came out, and it was by, what's her name? Schwartz, isn't it? Something. She was part of the DNC.
Yes, the woman with the curly hair.
Yeah.
Deborah Wasserman. Or Schultz.
Schultz. I knew it's Deborah something Wasserman with a shusha. Like,
yeah. Yeah. She was a major DNC person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, English names are so hard. Everyone complains about Spanish. No. The thing is that the WikiLeaks happened, so it was clear who they really were wanting, Bernie Sanders. Why didn't Bernie Sanders come out? And he did say the establishment, but I felt he should have come stronger at the DNC and the Democrats, and possibly even consider, with all this momentum that he had, to go third party, to break away, you know, but he didn't. And that was my disappointment, that I felt he should have. And when Hillary Clinton won the nomination, he supported her. And I remember watching on Democracy Now! The DNC, and there were the Bernie's supporters there, and they were protesting.
Yeah.
And the DNC were so dismissive of them.
Yeah.
And it was very condescending. And Bernie made a lot of people feel like, why didn't you stand up for us, especially the young people? Because there was a huge young people turnout, and inspired so many people for this old 72-year-old at that time man. And you had this massive young people support. So I felt he had to take responsibility for that as a leader, and he didn't. And instead, he told us, we have to obey. We have to concede. We have to kneel. We have to kneel.
Yeah.
And people didn't want that. So I thought that was very disappointing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You want to say anything?
I mean, just maybe that might be a next point. Like, yep. Afterwards, you know, I expected him, you know, to pull away from the Democratic Party, you know, and do his own thing, because he had obviously support, you know, and I mean, I don't know. Obviously, it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And but I mean, I was expecting that to happen post elections, you know, in running into this, you know, even as a, you know, the Green Party or whatever, independent. But you know, that's what another reason that I'm really anti-Bernie now, that, you know, because of those
things. No llegamos ahí, espera.
But we'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to get there now.
Okay.
And I think the best way to do this, thinking about it, is actually to say, first, a pretty simple question.
Yeah.
This 2020, Bernie's running. He ran in the Democratic primary in California.
What about the journey like Kenny from 2016 to 2000?
Well, we'll get there, because I think we have to see where you're at right now to see if there's a journey at all to be made, right? I think. You know, so this is the way I'm thinking. Okay, at least you didn't.
You go. You're the one leading this time.
The Democratic primary just happened. Did you vote for Bernie Sanders?
Right now?
On Tuesday.
No. You don't want to.
I'm not disclosing. Okay. I vote.
All right, that's a tough one, because because the reason I ask is, so you, over the last 4 years, went from a place where you would vote for a guy like Sanders to a place of not the Democratic primary, whatever. So what happened? What do you think is the major shift that happens over those 4 years that gets you to that point? That's why, I mean, I don't know how you're going to answer this, because I don't know what you did, you know, so.
But personally, I went from a liberal to a socialist revolutionary, you know, basically, understanding that, like I mentioned earlier, just a second ago, I was disappointed because he didn't run as an independent, and just understanding his role and understanding socialism and understanding that he is not socialism, you know, even though he calls himself, just the fact that he calls himself a socialist democrat, but his policies, his approach, it's not that different than what has happened in other countries. And I see a big warning sign with him. I see he being more detrimental to socialism and to actually workers rising up and, you know, and fighting back and having actually power, you know, that's not depending on this messianic figure. Mm-hmm. So again, my understanding of socialism has evolved. And again, I think when I was a liberal, I understood socialism as the government giving people stuff, you know, just handouts, you know, and this is one critique, right, that the Republicans do,
yeah,
you know, to socialism, that, you know, government handouts to lazy people.
Mm-hmm.
And again, my understanding of socialism has changed. And so I see him, and I see him as a fraud now that I see his body of work, you know. And forget, again, his rhetoric of the past. I'm focusing on what he's done after he lost. That's when I started to turn, you know, on Bernie. Because the stuff that he's done is not socialism. And again, now that I understand more, I understand that, you know, socialism is not top-down. It's not Bernie Sanders pushing socialism. You know, it's us, the people, doing it. And us telling them what to do. You know, our politicians or our leaders being responsive to us. So I've changed.
Yeah.
And so therefore, I think he's just wearing a mask.
I'm going to come back to you, Eduardo, in a second. But the people who even currently support Bernie Sanders, even Bernie Sanders himself would say, this is not just about me.
Yeah.
That if I am president in 2020, that this is really about you, everyone else. This is about the movement that will come from me.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that rhetoric that he's saying? Because he's actually saying that he often says,
mm-hmm,
it's not about me, it's about this movement. Yeah. What do you make of that in light of what you're saying? Because it sounds like he's saying the same thing you're saying,
mm-hmm,
but there must be a difference, or I assume there's a difference.
I mean, there is a difference, because again, if we examine things like the Green New Deal, you know, that is not socialism. That is capitalist reformism, you know, like making capitalism benevolent and, you know, selling this idea that it can be tamed and you can, you know, with just a few tinkering and regulations and, you know, that, you know, it can be tied down. And And so that's what he's selling when he's telling me the Green New Deal. You know, when he's selling me borders, basically the American people. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not talking about internationalism. And yeah, he talks about empire, war, and this stuff. But he wants to maintain some of the structures that are tools of exploitation for all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, so he just wants to... His focus is very narrow, and it's a reformist focus for me. Mm-hmm. And being a reformist is still being a capitalist in my mind now. Mm-hmm. So he's a capitalist reformist. He's not a socialist. He's not about, you know, even though he does say, you know, power to the people, but he's still talking about government knowing better than people.
Right.
And right. Especially a government and a system that has capitalist institutions. So we expect capitalist institutions to provide justice. Mm-hmm. And so no, like, you know, and that's where I disagree with him, that this thing needs to be undone, and yeah, we need to have our own institutions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think we can change. And it's evident, you know, we have less and less power, and we have a longer road to travel to, you know, to fight back.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't think we are concerned. We are, you know, about the same thing, like, but the approach is different, I think. Mm-hmm. And so he's top down. And I'm all about bottom up.
Okay.
About workers taking over.
Well, we're gonna have to get to Eduardo now. So I think Eduardo, maybe I'll take a different approach, because I don't know what to say if I don't exactly know how you voted. But I imagine you're saying.
I have a question for Kenny, actually.
Yeah, go ahead.
Did you vote locally?
I did not. That's another.
I was just curious, because I know Andy, you don't vote at all.
I might sometime, but no, I didn't vote in this one. But
you did not vote in this time, even for the propositions, the state propositions or the local the measures. And you didn't vote at all.
And I would like to say why.
But you didn't
at
all.
Okay. No, it's part of the same thing.
Both of you. But you vote sometimes.
There could eventually be something that would be like, I'll vote to stop this guy from taxing my sugar.
Right.
My sodas.
You should stop voting. I did that too, for the public. You're getting in people's way.
Exactly.
And you...
Because I want to vape too. I want to be able to vape freely.
No. You don't vote at all.
My first time not voting at all.
But are you... I'm just talking in general. Do you vote at all?
I used to. I did.
But will you vote into the future?
It's something that I wrestle with. Again, I'm not...
Local, even if it's not
national. But again, it's the same thing. Again, we end up voting for things that we
will
think are better.
Will you not vote in the future?
I don't think it's that simple. Again, and I would like you said, you don't want to mischaracterize me.
Yeah.
My reasoning is that we end up voting for a lot of things we think is benevolent,
mm-hmm,
but they're not.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, like the liberals and Democrats loving taxing poor people to teach them better because, you know, taxing their coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
You know, that, and then in turn, it gives tools for police to criminalize people.
Well, I'm talking about like judges or bonds or anything.
Well,
it doesn't have to be
judges.
Because he, at least I know that you will vote sometime in the future if you feel like it. You're not saying no completely, no?
Yeah.
And Kenny, I'm not quite sure. Are you?
No, I didn't vote this time. I can tell you that.
And for the future?
I don't know.
You might.
Because I
don't know is not definitely not.
No.
Maybe. Yeah.
Because one thing that I wrestle with is that this notion that you cannot fight back if you're just treading water.
So you two sometimes vote.
Yeah.
And I always vote.
Okay.
So I want to be clear with everyone. Because I think...
You're more in the moral high ground here.
Well, go ahead, Eduardo.
I'm getting somewhere with
you. Yes.
Yeah.
I have changed the way I see my vote, is what I'm trying to get at.
Okay.
Which is the reason why I still vote.
Yeah.
I have lost my confidence in the electoral politics, in the elections and process. This is why I'm talking about. I'm not mm-hmm. just because I'm a high moral or anything. No, really. I really am trying to distinguish something for everyone here. I now have lost my confidence in voting. So what I'm about to say, right, has to do with Bernie Sanders.
I consider it as just another count statistic, like signing up for the consensus, like getting your demographic down.
Right.
That's how I see it now. Mm. I don't think that it will make any difference. So to answer your question about Bernie Sanders, I did vote for Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. Why? Because I knew California will go either way with liberal. And I just wanted to put down how many people went for this and went. I agree more in alignment with a lot of those reformist ideas. I cannot say I'm a revolutionary socialist like you both claim to be. I really am not. I've said in this, I've been very transparent with everyone, that if the revolutionary train is there, I will hop onto it, and I'm waiting for it.
We have 7 or 8 different episodes
where we can attest. Yeah, I say
on record.
I have said that all the time. And still, within the circles of liberals and progressives, I'm constantly attacked.
Mm.
And I'm attacked here. So I'm attacked by both revolutionaries, socialists, anarchists, and I'm attacked by progressives, and everyone thinks that I'm a fraud.
Yeah.
No? You all think I'm a fraud, they think I'm a fraud, everyone thinks I'm a fraud on the left.
No one said fraud.
I don't say fraud.
Flip-flopper,
no,
maybe.
But you both, on the record, have attacked me. And
yes.
And it's fine, because I'm thick-skinned. The point is that I did vote, and for Bernie Sanders. I voted to count, just to tally. I knew California was going, and will, for the November elections, will not go for Trump. I predict this now, hold me accountable to it, because it has shown from the past. And I knew Bernie was probably going to win California, given how much he has really put energy here. So I just wanted, just as a, you know, another Latino that hear some of those progressive reformist policies, yes, I am in alignment with some of those, like free education, like I am concerned about the environment. Like, I do think that healthcare is all right. I don't think this is the way anymore for me. Hold on. I don't think this is the way for me anymore.
Yeah.
I wouldn't run as a Democrat. I would not run for this binary system. I don't have confidence in the presidency anymore. And for the November election, if it comes to Biden or Trump, I'm not voting for those, any of those two, because to me, those two are the same.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a difference in my vote. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be very clear why I voted.
Yeah.
It's like, to me, it's like filling out the consensus form.
Can I try to...
I want to clarify.
No, so in 2016, when you voted,
yeah,
that was not a just fill it in.
No.
That was a vote for something.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this time when you voted, you were not thinking, oh, I'm changing this, I'm changing that. So,
yeah,
that's how one thing I hear in the difference.
Yeah.
So, two questions: what caused that change?
Yeah.
Is that about Sanders? Is that about something else that caused that change? Not so much in Sanders, I hear as much as the electoral system and voting and things like that. Can you say something about that?
Just one more thing: even if you do vote, our votes, the popular vote, is not counted. It's the electoral college. So. Again, it does not matter.
Or it's superdelegates and
right,
whatever.
Right, yeah. So what has changed is seeing how the Democrats are against Bernie. And Bernie allows it. It's seeing the Democrats, as we had mentioned in an episode, go after Bernie. And Bernie allows it. It's that I have lost my confidence in Bernie. Because we need a strong leader.
Yeah.
And I understand that many of my friends looking at this will probably be upset from what I'm saying. And I understand their reasons for their confidence in a person. Because a lot of people are disillusioned with La Revolución. They don't think that it will happen. They're disillusioned. I understand that sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's all right to allow the space for that, because people are really tired and they're exhausted and they want something different and they do get disillusioned. And Bernie Sanders is a populist candidate. And I wanted just to simply mark it. I don't have confidence in Bernie winning. I said this
in an episode when we did predictions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't have confidence.
You're looking right now. I think it's looking much more your way.
Yeah. So. I don't have confidence in the process, the election process, and I'm just waiting for something. And we're not going to go discuss this now, but I am waiting for some revolutionary thing to happen.
Someone to push the train.
So you can jump on it.
So I can jump on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you going to say something?
No, I mean, just... So would you, now to get you on record, would you still vote on like measures and things like that?
Yeah,
and,
I will. Yeah, I will. Because some of these things... Like Andy and I, like you talked about soda tax. In the last episode, for me, it wasn't just a soda tax. I don't really care about the soda tax.
Yeah.
I care about having a buffer, and we disagree on this.
Yeah.
For some of the things, for example, building a dam.
Mm-hmm.
If we could vote to stop a dam being built from a resource, a natural resource being constructed over or being tampered with, I will vote to stop that. And that's why I'm upset with Andy when he doesn't even vote for that. Because for me, it's, if this revolution will happen, at least some of us will try.
Wow, that finger is really wagging today. Yeah.
Some of us.
You see how good I've been as the interviewer, and I look
you can challenge.
You're being vicious.
But that's some of us. And we had that disagreement too for the climate change episode that,
I mean, some of us will at least create buffers around the destruction of natural resources, which take years. If I've given this example in the last episode. Yes. If there are acres of redwood forests that there was a measure on a ballot that people would vote for to either cut or not cut, and you're not going to vote, these trees will not grow back even if your revolution comes. Your revolution will not have these trees come back. They take thousands and thousands of years for old growth redwood forests to grow. And you think that your little vote does not count? It counts for the local things. I understand when you talk about electoral college, but you dismiss how the at least creating some of these protective buffers as we're waiting for the revolutionary train to happen. Some of us are there making sure that there is stoppage to that. So I do. I will say.
But I mean.
I have to just be the interviewer today.
Oh yeah, you gotta be neutral. But I don't have to.
Attack me later.
No, but I mean, but
go on. I will still stick by the redwood forests.
And then that's a different. But even that, that's why I think, as long it's like a cancer, you can put a band-aid on a symptom of cancer. But if you're not attacking the cancer itself, you know, the body's gonna die.
Well, then attack the cancer, and in the meantime, do both. You see, that's the thing. Okay. It's black and white for you both, and it's not that simple. Well, it's complicated, and I believe you can do both. You can have the revolutionary come when the revolutionary will come, and at the same time, you can take care on these natural resources until that revolution comes.
But so, for example, like take Obama. He talked so much about protecting all this shit, but then, you know, he was a big proponent of, you know, shelling and, you know, natural gas, and that shit is about to, you know, it's as destructive as
right, oil. But it was not accelerated. A lot of the natural resources that were under the Obama administration have been able to survive. Yellowstone National Park, the drilling that happened in Alaska, he stopped. The pipeline that happened, he also decided to veto. There are so many things that could have happened that now you see, there is an estimate. I will link to a link how much Trump has accelerated what Obama did do, because he was not clean. He did not have clean hands. But it was a struggle with him constantly. And Trump, under Trump's administration, you have accelerated the drilling and destruction of our natural resources.
And I agree.
Sometimes you all, okay?
We're climate deniers. I agree, but again, why is Trump in power? Why has this more fascist, more despicable person, why is he in power?
Indulge in that, but meanwhile, I create these buffers.
Where are the buffers now?
There are measures that were passed.
But didn't you just say that Trump accelerated things?
Yeah, but the local level, at the local level, there was a creek here in Oakland where they were going to build over it because of a measure that was widely by everyone here stopping that creek to be built over, it was saved. But had we not voted, the developers would have just constructed over it. And what would you have done in 10, 20, 30 years when this revolution will come?
But you're assuming that we're not doing that stuff either. What I'm saying is that
you can do both.
This is the problem.
You said
spend so much energy in not understanding.
Oh, I didn't vote for local politics.
No, I don't.
You said you didn't either. So it's like there are things you can do. You know, I think it's also a little bit. There are women that do not have access to abortion in southern states, and when people don't vote, at least to have some clinics there, it's so easy for us to just say, we're going to wait for the revolution to happen. When people are on the ground actually trying to have these things, access to some things. I understand,
but this is
you can do both.
This is the difference because, again, I'm very involved in my community.
Yeah, do it.
You know, no, I'm very involved in my community.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the day, regardless of who's in office,
yeah,
who with ballots, our community, we take care of each other.
Good.
Yes, you know, and the reality is that most of us don't even understand what we're voting for. And we think we're voting for one thing, and you know how complicated, how much work it takes.
There's so many organizations that break it down. There are so many organizations that break it down at the local level. In Spanish, English, Chinese,
like the sugar tax?
That one as well. They break it
down. Like the vaping?
They had different, yes, they break it down. And there's opposing sides. There are organizations here in San Francisco that will help you. I don't want to hear excuses.
So you're asking me to...
They're in Spanish, Tagalog, Chinese, and English, and they break it down in simpler terms.
Okay.
So I'm just saying, I don't want to hear it.
You are right to say that I don't agree with you that you can do both. So that's the part. That's all I'll say. Is you say we can do both, and I say we cannot. The legacy and the destruction of the left shows, Bernie Sanders' campaign shows that you cannot do both. That... You either draw people into that
system. I'm talking
system.
Local.
No, but
you want to talk about national.
But all those things
I'm
are connected.
I'm talking local.
That's AOC.
This is the same thing we talked about last time.
But all those things are connected.
I'm talking local. The natural resources.
No, but it's not just natural. I'm curious of, for example, there are policies or measures that we pass to contain, you know, gentrification and people, poor people getting pushed out. And where
that's
is
why
the
you have to
that?
Have your judgment and see which ones actually make a difference and do not make a difference.
Yeah.
I don't think, for example, when you have a Democrat and a Republican on for the state assembly, that will make a difference. I don't care who you vote for in that case. But I do care if you have a measure that's going to affect some environmental policy here at the local level.
Right. And this isn't necessarily, but I'll just say that we disagree about the fact that one of those is not important and then suddenly the other is. So that's where, and I go, no, you are right to say that one is not important, and that other one is not important. You are better off staying out of that and fighting for the thing you actually want to deal with all those sorts of things. Because if you get involved in that, what it does is draws you into their game, not into our game. That's what I'm saying.
And that's what we're losing.
Why we're losing. We're playing.
We're itemizing so many little fights, you know. In one, again, it's about fighting cancer for me.
Then fight it, and at the same time, find some symptoms temporarily.
Yes. Now, I do see how this discussion, it is
but
related.
You were asking me about my vote, so I gave it to you. I gave
you
the answer.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No, you did. I'll just say this. Maybe what we should do is finish off with any thoughts about things you've learned from watching 2020.
Well, what did you want to know about my vote? So I gave it to you the answer.
No, you told me you voted for Bernie's.
What about it? What did you?
What I learned is that you voted for Bernie, but you did it much more reluctantly and with much less enthusiasm. It was almost
I did not post anything in support of Bernie.
Right.
I did not talk about it.
Right.
I did not encourage
it. You didn't believe it.
I didn't go after people.
Yeah.
I usually have 20 people that I go after for them to vote what I tell them to vote on. I don't know if that's illegal. But, and vote
lobbying
for
me. Lobbying is illegal, so.
Yeah, you didn't ask for my ballot?
I did not ask for your ballot, right?
Oh my God, that's a list.
Are you okay with my? Because I think I somewhat.
We'll come
understand.
Back to it.
Yeah.
We'll come back
yeah.
to it. I think this is an open for debate
yeah.
for another time.
But What has there been anything that you've learned from watching
for both of us
the campaign this year? Bernie Sanders, Democratic Party, Trump, I guess you could throw him in there. Any lessons that you've taken away from this year? Where things are at? As you've watched this stuff unfold, Super Tuesday, all that.
I mean, just with the whole Buttigieg and what is the other candidate?
Klobuchar.
The mastery and manipulation of the Democratic, you know, the DNC, the party, and, you know, reinforcing this idea that Bernie keeps taking the abuse. You know, one thing, it's like, how many times, you know, you know, again, it's just shows me the inability to work within the system to get anything, you know, significant, you know, done for the people, you know, most vulnerable, you know, us, the workers, yeah. Which, you know, who are the ones that are going to pay the price for global warming, you know, for all those things, you know, that we might try to control locally, but again, it's a big system and it ultimately is going to come back and bite that little creek over here close by, because we, again, we just want to defend the creek. We don't want to defend all the rivers and all the oceans.
Who said, who doesn't want but, to? That's I an mean, assumption.
But I mean, but, sorry, I can't.
Es que me está atacando.
Tú también.
No, he's like the Democrat debate. It's like right, mentioning, yeah, you know, insinuations.
I'm going to get behind you when you're like
moderator.
We need a more active, again. Aggressive moderator in this thing.
But just, you know, again,
don't side-dub me.
To me, it reinforces the fact that the Democratic Party is a dead end to the left, to, you know, revolutionary or whatever, you know, and again, the word revolution, we had to talk about what that is in another episode, but, you know, just changing the power dynamics and giving power to the people, you know, that's ultimately, I mean, again, in a summary, what I think of revolution, flipping the power, you know, to the masses. And because I think most of us agree we don't have it, and people are disillusioned. And right now, I'm like listening to and seeing people's disillusion with Bernie Sanders, you know, losing and again. But how can those
that won 4 out of the 14, and Biden won the 10.
And so, how does that not inform your opinion in that the Democratic Party is a dead end? You know, and one question is I ask, are you going to kiss the ring when Joe Biden, if Joe Biden
not,
is the...
I'm not.
No, I know you
sure
have said
not.
That. But,
yeah.
But, you know, but that's a reality people have to contend now. And how does that not tell you that's a dead end? That the Democrats will do everything in their power to steer things into a dead end so that basically, again, they become... They do the same shit in the different way that the Republicans.
Yeah.
And they steer you to that shit. And so it's a dead end. And so, again... In summary, that's what I've learned.
Yeah.
Repeat your question.
Yeah. Anything that, as you've seen this election unfold, lots of things have happened. Mostly we're talking about the Democratic primary here.
Yeah.
That you've learned from these last weeks, months. You made that initial Biden prediction.
Yeah.
And it looked bad, actually. And now it looks good, you know. So.
For Biden.
Yeah, for Biden, you know. But.
Yeah, not
what,
for me.
No, I understand.
For
I understand.
Him, yeah.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
What do you take away from what you've seen?
Look, I thought really the Democrats would at least some start coming to their senses when they saw what happened in 2016. It's clear that they're willing to keep Trump in office than have Bernie Sanders. It's clear. They would rather put up with Trump than have Bernie Sanders shift the party over to reformists the way that this reformist left wing, left sideways. So they're borrowing the same playbook from the 2016 with Hillary. Joe Biden is just Hillary Clinton. So they're supporting him. And the fact that in 3 days, bam, 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 you have from Pete Buttigieg to Klobuchar to Steyer,
and now Bloomberg.
And then Bloomberg, but that is later. The three, bam, bam, after Saturday for Carolina.
Yeah.
Clearly, I know there were conversations behind the curtain
Obama,
that
yeah.
were had.
Yeah.
that they were having and said, we cannot have Bernie Sanders win. You are not making it. You have to go behind. You have to support. You have to support Joe Biden because he is going to, he's going to need your votes. Otherwise, you're splitting the party. And Pete supported Joe immediately. Klobuchar supported Joe. And so that's...
Steyer.
I think Steyer.
I believe so.
I believe so. Yeah. But... No, he was Beto...
Better O'Rourke.
And then Bloomberg, who spent, oh my gosh, millions of dollars and
half
did not
hundreds
even
of millions.
Half a billion.
Can you imagine? He is just.
In 3 months,
you,
right?
It's like just, I can do anything. It's just an ego thing, you know? I don't have to win. I just have to spend, get my name recognition at least. I mean, I'm not really losing and the stocks will go up for me.
Yeah.
You know? And so I just, I know. I posted, Donald Trump tweeted, and I want to read that tweet actually, but I reshared it on my Facebook.
This is the one you sent me.
Is it? Yes. Yes. So I will just go to the text message quicker then, and I had reposted it on my Facebook and I said, I agree with Trump, and then people were bashing.
Lost their mind.
This was Trump tweeted: Pete Buttigieg is out. All of his Super Tuesday votes will go to sleepy Joe Biden. Great timing. This is the real beginning of the Dems taking Bernie out of play. No nomination again. That, and I posted and I said I agree with Trump. And people were like, what does that say about you?
Right. You're a Trump supporter. Right. You're the problem.
Right.
You probably voted for Trump.
He's a Russian agent, yeah. Actually.
Jesus. Jesus. So I agree. It's true. They are there to hold Joe Biden in place and power and have the Democrats be in part and be in power and stay in power. They're not going to allow Bernie Sanders, so...
They don't want radicalism.
No.
Yeah.
Even if he's not as radical as you both like, he is different, at least. I will just say the word different. If you both don't think he's radical, he is different from the rest. He is different from... Andy's shaking his head for our listening audience. He is different.
I would say he plays a different role in supporting that same...
You said the word different, so he is different, yeah.
Yeah, he plays a different role in supporting that same apparatus. He plays a different role to keep Joe Biden afloat so that he can... Joe Biden can declare wars, so Joe Biden can screw the poor. So he plays a different role than Biden in making sure Biden can do what he needs to do. Yes.
Because at the end of the day, he's bringing the more radical Democrats to the table. And he's gonna, and many will not vote like you. For Joe Biden, but many will because they want to do the at least we're beating Trump.
The lesser of two evils.
Yeah, yes. And you know, and this is towing the party line. So that's how they bring you into the party, and so there is no future for you know the radical left in the Democratic Party.
Anyway, I was hoping I could share my thoughts about what I because I
this
think
is this is not about you. This
Well, your thoughts. You get 2 minutes.
I've been talking. I'm gonna throw one in there that's maybe a bit controversial, but I'm
really you controversial. Maybe. You
you want to be controversial today?
Because this is something that I've been talking with Brian about. Okay. But the first one is, you know, we've been talking about like when Warren did the whole like you're a sexist, Bernie. Was that Warren doing that, or was the Democratic Party pushing him? Right.
Yeah.
So to me, I think it's a wrap. Democratic Party pushes all these, they play all these people like chess pieces. And when you see how they mobilized the entire party apparatus to say, Warren, you're staying in on Super Tuesday to keep Bernie Sanders' vote in California down. Yeah. And you are out. Now I just feel it's a done deal. Now we can just say none of these actors ever operate in isolation. They all operate within the context of an establishment party. I include Sanders in that part, but you know, but certainly Buttigieg, Steyer, Warren, all of them are part of that same apparatus, and they consult each other and are consulted with on each other on how they did. So none of them act in isolation then before Tuesday, and they didn't in the run up to it. So that's one thing. This has been confirmed for me. The second one is, so one of the analogies that made me think about Bernie Sanders getting the nomination which really that was a very unlike, why did I say that? Like, why would I think that that would happen? Because it's a very unlikely outcome for the Democratic Party to let a person like that, you know, loose on the ranch. Was because I had made this analogy. I had made the analogy of in 2016, the populist right wing guy got away. They did everything in their power to like smash him, and people would not buy it. There was nothing they could do. The establishment, the reason they freaked out when Clinton lost to Trump was because that was the establishment and the ruling class saying, we can't just make people do whatever we want them to do. They're not just puppets that we can just tell them any, we just didn't say anything and their minds will change. And it was very reassuring to me actually that the working class does have a mind of its own and cannot just be bullied and mass mediated into doing anything they want, right? Now, of course, that was more on the right wing side, the right wing populist side, and that sentiment existed on the left wing, but their candidate kissed the ring, so that never got to manifest itself in any with any fight because Trump never kissed the ring. Trump said, "I'm not." When faced with the notion of "Will you, Trump, if you lose, will you vote for the Republican?" He was like, "No." He wouldn't agree to that. Bernie Sanders will definitely agree to voting for Biden. You know, so he put something different that people responded to on the right and went for it. And I thought that same thing today, I do believe it exists on the left, that, and was like, you know, maybe the establishment's not gonna be able to corral the left. I look at Super Tuesday, and I look how quickly, just from the Democrats, you know, Buttigieg says this, Steyer says this, Klobuchar says this, and yes, I actually do think there's a lot of mischief within the election as well, like there's mischief on the college campuses where the elections went down, in Texas and places like that. I still don't believe that the DNC ran a clean election, so I believe that there was chicanery there.
Yeah, there were long queues in Texas.
But let's put that aside. Mm-hmm. I will say this. It's led me to...
Predominantly people of color areas, yeah.
It's led me to believe that those of us on the left, and I'm going to be... I'm now including myself, because we're all on the left here. We are more chumps. We are more suckers. We think of ourselves as open-minded, as independent. Oh, we're the enlightened people. We are bigger suckers to the mass media and to the machine than the right is. Because they were not able to do what they did to the right wing that they did to us in like 3 days. And that's a tough one for me to swallow, which is to say that our side, the progressive side, the liberal side, we are the biggest fucking chumps on the planet compared to the people we always spit on and say, oh, those people, they're suckers. They'll vote for Republicans. No, you're a sucker. They got you to do in 3 days what they couldn't get those people to do in 3 months. And so there's something I have to think about there. Like, why? Mm. Why? How were we able to be so fooled, so fucked, and so mind-fucked so quickly? What's up with us? And I think liberals and progressives really should think about when they look over those people who vote Republican, look over those people who they think are so stupid. No, if you look at what just happened here, then we are the idiots.
And I would throw into that, reminder that the teacher strikes started in those states.
Yes.
You know, so a lot of the resistance, you know, to the establishment, look at where it's coming from.
So I'm still grappling with that thing in my head, and maybe it's just a bitterness, but I don't know.
It's interesting that you, because, yeah.
You get the point I'm making?
That they did not go for Bernie Sanders as a populist.
Right, they just, because they could have just, if that had been what happened with Trump, they would have just said, you could throw Buttigieg and Klobuchar and all your clowns at me, you know, we're still going with our guy. Because we're trying to screw you. Because we're trying to fuck the establishment with, that's what we're trying to do. That's why we're voting for Bernie Sanders, supposedly among people. It was like, because we're down with this, we want to bring the establishment down. And so we can see that when you come at us with that nonsense, it just stiffens our spine to even more go with the candidate who you and I know isn't going to do anything. But people, you'd at least think people would go in the same way that they wrongly went with Trump, thinking. But at least Trump, people at least stiffen their spine enough not to go for the nonsense over on that side in 2016, not to just be totally fooled and suckered by the establishment who said we can't do this. And our side gets fooled in 3 days. I don't know. That's something I'm thinking about.
What do you think might be a factor?
Education. I think education, like, that's the one thing I was thinking. I think education, that we call ourselves educated, actually is, we're just bigger suckers because we're educated.
Indoctrinated.
Indoctrinated, that's what it is. It means that we're looking we have more of a tendency to look for somebody to tell us what to think. That's what really, a person who's educated is like, tell me what to think. Oh, New York Times said this. Oh, so-and-so said that. That's one thing.
Just, I've actually been grappling with that idea that in some of the circles of the people that we're trying to organize things, people are automatically to defer to so-called experts. And when I call experts in, even though, you know, in different areas, a lot of them are lied to, you know, and they're not experts. But we defer to authority more, you know.
It's a good question, yeah. Eduardo. First answer.
I mean, it does make sense, no? Like, when you think about the right, they look at people who are not necessarily experts and don't care about facts.
Flat earthers and stuff.
Right.
Right.
The very interesting people.
This is going to make me think a lot.
Yes.
It's good.
So,
the people on the right tend to be somewhat
independent-minded.
I don't know how to call that.
Well,
but they tend to be.
But wouldn't you say that at the end of the
more
day,
open-minded? Maybe.
Do you see? First, he's quoting Trump, and now look at him. He's going to get off our train, and he's going to become Republican. Shit. But in four years,
no. They tend to be more open-minded to diverse people.
Yeah, it's like what you saw in Florida a little bit.
Yeah,
talk about Florida.
Diverse, like Trump is, but you know, like they don't want to be told what to do.
But, yeah, that
right?
part. But
like, I look at Jake. Here's a good example. Did you see that episode with Jake? He's a very good example. He is not Republican, but he identifies now more with the right, and he was on the left.
Yeah, I would maybe think he's moved in the libertarian sort of direction.
Yeah, but on that side.
Yeah.
And supports a lot of the things that Republicans want. And he's very skeptical, and I had a PhD. We were debating once, and I had a PhD biology friend from France who speaks good English. But I said, you know what? I'm not going to say his name here, but I'll just call him Jean. I said to him, you have to help me with my friend. You have to, like, I went and recruited you.
Yeah.
You have to help me because you're a PhD. He might respect you and everything. So he came into the conversation and everything. And he would three-way. And Jake would do the same thing he did with you.
He could care less.
He was so disrespectful. He was so disrespectful. And I said, Jake, do not disrespect my friend. And I told my friend in French, I'm so sorry. I apologize for his behavior. He's like, it's all right. And he doesn't care about his credential. He doesn't care that he has a PhD. He doesn't care. He says, I don't care. These things are simple. They're not complicated. La, la, la.
So, I mean, I would like to address this some other day, but I mean, like, I personally am going through something like that where I look around and some of the people that are the most educated are the people that believe in less in democracy, actually. They want top-down shit.
Yep.
You know, they're more indoctrinated into that system. And for example, even like I brought it up in another episode where I think some of the rhetoric or the things that we should be talking about, like why the fuck do we want more capitalist government? You know, and that's, they're talking on the Republican side about this, but the left is not. We want more government. We want to tell people what to do.
Yeah.
We are all about sensible gun control.
Right. Yep.
You know, but they're like, we don't trust the government.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these things that, again, I think we as workers who have been cheated, lied on, trampled on for so long, on the left, we're not looking at these things. And we look at them as backwards people.
Yep.
You know, and it comes down, I think, to me, to elitist bullshit that comes from, the holes of academia. You know, and because I was that asshole with my family. I thought I knew better. I did. You know, I thought I knew better because I went to UC Berkeley.
Mm.
And then they needed to learn some shit. Mm. But now that I listen back, and my brother fought me on so many things. My mother did too. But my approach, my elitist bullshit, didn't want to see the knowledge that they have, the understanding that they understand they're being cheated on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and but I call myself an expert, you know, and I knew better. And so I'm trying to change my approach
mm-hmm.
because there is a lot of knowledge, you know, and things that we can learn, you know. But I think there's an element of that. Because, again, I see a lot of people that are very educated that don't want to have
community like meetings. No, let's us decide and then tell them what to do. Mm-hmm. You know, let a group of specialists take care of things. So,
well, yeah, I agree. And yeah, you both think I'm elitist or what? So are you looking at me like that, Andy? I know you.
I
have called me
I
elitist.
I told you. I think you have. I think you do. At times. We talked about Spanish, the Spanish language. I don't care. As long as enough people understand, then that's language. You know, I don't care that dictionary or La Real Academia Española, you know, like...
which I went to and I
visited. You know, like some institution that defines what's right and what's wrong. No. Like, you know, if my family understands, you know, that's perfect.
Yeah. Touching base on this, I think that I remember we had a conversation and I said to you, Andy, the right says so many stupid things, but you don't really care. And you attack when the left says what you consider stupid things. But why do you not care? So, and you said you were contemplating about this and you said something that struck me. And you said, I think it's mostly because the left are arrogant. Mm. Do you remember?
I do, yeah.
We were in the car. And you said, it's just the way they come off. It's arrogant. Whereas the right is sort of, they'll say it, but they don't say it as in form of arrogance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It comes off in a way that's just, they're just giving their opinion, they're listening to you, they'll give your... But the left undermines you. The left will say that's wrong, and then in this culture, cancel you.
Yeah.
What is the cancel culture? When they will say this person, they label you, and this person is
sending out Trump tweets.
And that's
needs to be canceled.
And that's why. Right. And I think that's why the left loves percentages and numbers. You know, and
no, I think there's. Why I was going to go with this, I think those have a place as well.
They do, but again,
they have a place.
But
I don't think it's elitist.
But in a context,
I think we need to measure things.
Yes.
We need to try to measure things. We need to try to have some sources to verify. We just can't be arbitrarily everyone deciding that this
is red and
this
is... But that's not what I was saying.
It's
when you
have to measure.
When you come to someone and you want to treat them, you know, and tell them and shove shit down their throat, they're going to resist and build walls. Because that happened with my family. I've seen that. You know, I've seen it with other people. No. Like, that's not a conversation. That's you telling people.
Right. But I have learned that you have to talk to people as a group and not individuals. That's what I have
but
learned.
But you're still talking
when
to people.
When you talk
not
to people in
people.
A group, people sort of don't... We're going into a different world
we
here.
Are.
Yeah,
we're,
but whatever.
But, you know,
we'll put this on the next episode.
We'll
we're
but,
at an hour and 36.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's wrap up. But I think that when I have talked to people individually, they feel threatened by me because of their ego gets in the way. They don't like how I talk something. And then my language, the way that I talk about things, I know someone that the three of us know, that she is clouded or distracted by my presentation or the deliverance of what I am saying than by my content. And it's hard to reason with people like this, but at the same time, I have noticed that when I speak as a whole with other people, this person, as well as other people, tend to sort of listen to how other people are reacting. And then they sort of shift along with the group. So I have learned that individually, yes, the message cannot get through, but if you talk indirectly to people, this is my strategy now, that somehow everyone is sort of there will listen, but now they're all deciding as a group.
Yeah.
I think anyhow this is one, but we're
yeah.
steering away.
Yeah.
Any final I think thoughts on this? I think
no,
this
I,
is a very important that
I
you
do.
Like brought it up.
Yeah,
yeah,
and I probably will keep most of this conversation that we've
mm-hmm.
had even here, because it has been it's been connected to all these things, so I probably will keep it. We'll decide when we
or you
edit,
can make some
like
black and say some. This is where you know, or whatever. I don't know.
Segmentize. When y'all watch it again, you'll
you
see.
You love it chaotic.
I do. I do. I do. But I think you both did a very good job today. You know, and I appreciate you know your.
He's the expert.
No, and I think we had a good conversation about this. I think it was interesting to me. I think hopefully people will find it interesting.
Yeah, hope so.
Wow.
We have a few possibilities for future weeks. We still have your friends who we need to
do a weekend
thing. Special ed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there have been some developments in our union stuff, so...
We have some things.
Yeah. So, right, we'll take it from there.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's wrap up. And thank you for watching or listening. And if you've gone this far, please don't forget to share with your community and friends. Subscribe, rate, review. And you can find us on any of our 5 platforms on BitChute, Google Play, iTunes Podcast, YouTube, or Stitcher. Yeah, those are the 5 platforms.
You got them.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, and we'll catch you for next week.
All right,
ciao.
Take care.
Bye-bye.